Do we want to take a break now, or have Tim and Chi-Chi do their presentation with regards to the real estate, the private real estate, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll have our, have Oak Tree come in? What would you like to do?
Discussion.
Do I go ahead and
sure.
do your presentation?
Come on up, Jeff. So we'll tackle agenda item 5 and then take a break. Is that
yeah.
correct? Okay. So approximately every 2 to 3 years, we come back to the board with recommended allocation schedules for private equity, private real estate here. Anything where we have a significant private exposure, we project out what kind of capital we have available to deploy over the next 18 to 36 months. We were back to you with a private equity schedule about 2.5 years ago. This is the real estate schedule here. This is really just to give the board an indication about what you have available to commit in the interim here, and then we can talk about how we want to divide that. But this is the big picture analysis, and I'm going to let Jeff do the work on this one, so I'm going to let him kind of walk through how we develop these numbers and where we'd like to take this going forward.
Sure. So the punchline for our real estate allocation budget is really on page 2 of the first memo. There's a chart, real estate program review memo. Based on the current fund size, or the fund size as it was as of July 31st, our commitment to private real estate at 12.5%, or real estate at 12.5%, you take out REITs, the public portion, getting us down to 9.5%. Or 9 rather, plus an overcommitment for the private equity or the private real estate lag, the idea that when you commit capital, it takes time for it to actually get called and invested. We end up with an available dollar amount to commit of $177 million. With that, looking at the opportunity set as it is right now, the private real estate market, we feel that the core side of real estate has been heating up. It's highly priced. All real estate has been heating up and its prices are rising since that kind of financial market recovery. So looking at where we feel that capital would be best deployed in real estate, we feel are kind of the opportunistic and distressed sectors of real estate. We see these as areas where an experienced manager can go in and enhance the value of a purchase instead of kind of purchasing value, especially in the market today. As it is different from as it has been over the last 3 years, where as everything recovered, you had a tailwind of the real estate market pushing your returns higher. We feel today you're going to need an experienced operator that goes in, really changes an asset, repositions it, and creates value through some more, you know, sweat equity.
Flipping a property.
With that, you're not flipping a property from a very low basis, as was the case over the last few years. It's higher, but we still think there's opportunity there. The way most managers have explained it to me when I'm asking about this is return expectations are lower. The opportunity set is still robust, and relative to other real estate sectors, you're still better on the opportunistic and distressed end. Two of our current managers are in the market with funds right now. Both of the funds are having their first close estimated in October, so coming up, Angela Gordon and Oak Tree. Angela Gordon kind of does real estate what you'd call the old-fashioned way, buying a building, developing a building, repositioning it, and selling it.
Just a quick question. Who saw Angela Gordon's property in Florida? Somebody went down there and saw it. Okay. And came. You said it was really a good thing that you thought it was really good what was going on.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, they're taking distressed properties and flipping them.
All right.
Yeah. The term Angela Gordon uses is correct the underperformance of a property. The idea that if there's, you know, five hotels on a block with everybody with four having rooms going at $400 a night and one isn't, they're going to correct it to have that $400. Light example, but that's kind of their mentality. They typically work with a local operating partner, so they kind of have feelers in most major gateway cities or coastal. Oak Tree tends to be a little bit more technical. We've been in two of their funds before. Fund 5 and Fund 6. They're here today to talk about Fund 7. Same strategy, but what their strategy is having 6 major sectors that they'll focus on. It could be non-U.S., domestic, commercial, real estate, structured finance. One thing that they have done a lot of are what they call borrow recapitalizations, taking an equity stake in a building, allowing the original owner of the building kind of a second bite, assisting them in repositioning the property and then exiting. So they are more technical in their approach, but their approach is also a little bit more flexible, and that where they see different opportunity sets, they can rotate through their various silos of strength.
So where Funds 5 and 6 from Oaktree are really focused on distressed real estate. The borrow recapitalization is somebody took out a loan, it's underwater, they can buy the loan back at a discount from the bank, keep the operator there, restructure the deal. Very classic distressed. And I think last time we did the distressed allocation, we said, probably 12 months ago now, that distressed window was closing. That we were probably not going to be deploying capital there for a period of time. Oaktree's back in with Fund 7. Distress is done largely in the major gateway cities. There's still pockets in the secondary markets in Orange County, in Atlanta, but it's winding down. So the beauty of something like Oaktree is it's a large firm that can employ a large staff. They can have these 6 sleeves, so we can go from the borrow recapitalization just kind of sliding over to the next opportunity set. So they're much more flexible in what their fund can pursue. So just if anybody remembers the last time I said that was our last bite at the apple with distressed real estate, they're coming back here, but it's not going to have the same distressed flavor as Fund 5 and 6. It's going to have more of an opportunistic flavor.
How'd that impact the return on investment?
It'll go down.
One other theme that you'll likely hear most real estate managers that are operating in the distressed and opportunistic sectors talk about is Western Europe. As Europe is still largely recovering from the financial crisis, they typically paint the picture of Western Europe as where the U.S. was 3 years ago. Banks in Western Europe hold a lot of the loans. That most of the residential loans don't get securitized and sold off to investors like they did in the United States. So in Europe, as these banks are shedding these loans, the opportunity set is becoming more robust there. So what we would expect going forward would be for opportunistic and distressed managers to be doing more work in Europe. So that would be another thing when the managers come through to ask some questions on that, their local operating expertise there, because we want to make sure that they can do the same thing in the U.S. that they're intending to do in Europe.
And you'll note that we've never done a specific non-U.S. regional strategy. We've done global strategies in real estate, but we've never pursued an Asia only or a Latin American only or a European only. On page 6 of the memo, we do actually carve out up to $20 million question mark on European real estate that we'll take a look at over the next year or so. Ideally, it'd be something we could pursue with an existing manager, or we could be leveraging the fact that Sigler Guff runs a fund of funds for us. We could leverage their on-the-ground expertise in Europe there. It's something we'll look at. We have not done that historically. It's provided for in our policy statement, but we've never pursued it. Right now, we're seeing the market dislocations in Europe are compelling enough where we might want to find that local on-the-ground expert. But that's not front and center today, just what we're thinking about on the horizon.
You referred to these distressed and opportunistic properties as zombie properties in your memo. What do you consider? What is the duration of time that these fund people are talking about in terms of doing one of these properties? Is it? Do they say we'll turn it in 3 years? Do they say we'll turn it in 5 years? What are they saying?
They're typically saying 3 to 4 years. Yeah. I mean, given the term of the fund and everything, they try and operate within there.
So if everything matches up good, they're saying it's going to take them 3 to 5 years to...
From the time they purchase the property to getting it leased up, improved, and selling it.
Yes. With a zombie property as it's structured, the details are more in the,
it's just flipping
financial architecture than it is the physical architecture. versus developing a building from the ground up. Zombie property is generally something that's, you know, relatively well located, underutilized, and underimproved. So the improvements that need to go into it are, you know, light. They're not tremendous improvements.
Take care of the landscape, improve the lobby, provide some tenant improvement commission, pay leasing commissions. It's, that's really kind of, that, that'll be the tail end of distressed, really. It's, you've got a property that's nothing materially wrong with it. You can undercut the competition, fill it up, and sell it on.
You were, in your memo, you're referring to going to Europe and moving into Europe. I don't remember if I saw a percentage.
Going to Ukraine.
Sorry?
In the memo, in terms of a percentage.
Did I steal your question?
No, no, I'm saying that's where we need to go and do the due diligence.
Oh, the due diligence. Yeah. It's been done once, yeah.
The percentages as portions of the current funds that they're proposing today are the same as previous funds, but the idea being that it's more of an allowance. It's not, and they may use more of that allowance. In our commitment memo of exactly what we would like to go into, we said about $20 million, which comes out to, you know, a little over, gosh, on 616.
5%, 10%, what?
Oh, for the real estate program?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, 3%. Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Okay. So 3% of the fund would be labeled for Europe.
3 to 5%, yeah.
Okay. Okay. What if they come and say, great deal, it's a five star, it's going to take you up about to 8%. What do we say?
We'll get back.
Well, we're talking about up to a 20. Let's separate two topics here. We've got managers who are global in nature today, Oaktree, Angelo Gordon, DLJ, and every one of those funds has an allowance for non-U.S. Some it's 10%, some it's 40%. So what we're seeing here is the conversations we're having with our existing managers are saying the opportunity set seems to be migrating, depending on the asset segment, towards Western Europe. So they're saying, we've always had this allowance to Western Europe and to Asia, and we're probably going to be a little bit more biased towards Western Europe over the next 3 to 5 years. That's on the individual fund level. So we'll probably see our aggregate positioning in Western Europe grow, regardless of board action, because the board has already allocated to globally focused funds. In the memo, the allocation memo we have here today, what we're saying is we're hearing this groundswell that there might actually be legs to a recovery in Western Europe. If that's the case, and if we see it start to be proved out, we may want to, rather than just get Western Europe through our global managers, we may want to find a fund that specifically focuses on Western Europe to establish a beachhead there.
Okay.
And so what we're saying is, on an allocation basis, we're giving you target allocations to value add segment, to the distressed segment, to the opportunistic segment, and we're adding in a European segment for the first time.
Yeah, all right.
Just to be clear, the $20 million for the European segment is 3% of the real estate allocation, not 3% of the fund.
Yeah, it's
good point. Yeah, I get that.
It very much is a beachhead, and it's a starting point. And so, in that sense, if we can establish that through an existing relationship, great, because it's pretty small. But we'll see what comes down the road on that front. But we have roughly the $177 million available to commit today, so that's the guidance we want to provide to the board, that when you're thinking about follow-on funds from our existing managers, that's kind of the aggregate number we have to commit over the next year or two.
Is that less than 75 we just did?
Or no. That came out of the fixed income program.
In your memo, you're proposing 65 opportunistic, which is Angelo, and 65 distressed, which is Oaktree. Is that what you're proposing?
Yes. So, and maybe if I can kind of sense where this question is going, you know, what other funds are coming back to the market in the foreseeable future here? We know DLJ.
In my mind?
Yeah, DLJ is still in the early days of investing Fund 5, so they're not going to be back in the market anytime soon. We just recommitted to Sigular Guff's Distressed Real Estate Opportunity Fund 2. So that one's going to be, it's got another 2 to 3 years. Paulson's got another 2 to 3 years, and quite frankly, we probably won't be investing in the next. There may not be a next Paulson fund. On the value add side, we do know that Invesco is coming back to market, and we'll be looking at that over the next month.
What about Long Wharf? Are they coming back?
Long Wharf is still in early days of the prior fund.
Okay.
They've got another year at least.
And LaSalle?
LaSalle, have we heard anything? I mean, they had a very slow start.
Halfway done.
Yeah, they
halfway
haven't even done. Really gotten through our first commitment in a few years.
They're ago. Roughly halfway through it.
Yeah.
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 Right.
So
why no second Paulson fund?
Yeah, I had the same question. Curious about
because
that.
The opportunity set. The, in that case, remember what they were doing was buying improved or unimproved raw land that they would then sell on to housing developers. The reason it was such a great deal is because we could get in at the cost basis, and we'd already seen the prices move up. The prices are moving up rapidly. By the time that this money is deployed, the assets are harvested. In our conversations with management, they're not sure that prices are going to be at a point where it's going to make sense for them to be active in that market. So maybe not a second fund or third fund for them in the immediate future. That may be one where the opportunity set has moved past us. We pull back, and we can look at something further down the road.
Tim, you said we have approximately $177 million, and you're looking at how much? $20 million from this, correct? Or the no?
$130 million.
So that will leave like 47-ish. So
for Invesco, and
following up on Jerry's question, then there will be other opportunities. So that goes into that fund that we just sort of park funds until we.
Yeah, and that's a good point. The funds are not uninvested while we're waiting here. They're invested in the public real estate market. So basically, stock that holds real estate assets.
I mean, they're and I know you're collecting interest, but they're there as other opportunities come up or these others close, kind of things. So will you be recommending that we invest that $47 million in the near future or holding on to it for a little bit?
We will be underwriting the Invesco fund in the near future. Other opportunities would probably take a little bit longer to take a look at. So that's the memo. So the board's got the foundation for...
By the way, I like that memo. That was a good memo. Yeah. Even your zombie phrase.
That's strangely enough an industry term at this point.
He puts that in there so that you make sure that we've read it.
Yeah.
In all fairness, I think Oak Tree may have, they either coined it or they stole it very well.
Huh? So. Else did. I thought maybe you did it. I thought you
No, we're not quite that clever.
So I want to compliment Steph on all of the memos, or both of the memos. Yeah. Both very well done. Thank you, Chi Chi.
Yes, we really appreciate those.
Just imagine how much better it's going to be when we get into their new...
Stimulate
storeroom.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe we ought to keep them there. This is pretty good work.
Got some other news for you guys too.
Well, as long as we're about to go into a break, we'll bring up a tangent here. You'll notice that we developed these budgets based upon the July 31st balance of $6.95 billion. We can tell you that the August 31st balance is $7.08 billion.
Wow.
No cake.
Celebrating.
No celebrating, because when we hit five, you know what happened.
I have banned all barbecues and celebrations.
Good. No cakes coming, right?
This is better than the Apple event. You know, it's like the one more thing. You got anything? You got us to seven?
Sorry, Scott, we don't have any watches.
But wait, there's more. Interesting.
You don't have your T-shirt on. You've got it. Yeah, you're going to do that. You can't wear a shirt and tie.
That's everything?
Yeah, that's the allocation memo. So.
All right. Can we be back at 10 till?
Yeah, I love that. Thank you.